People all over the world listen to Arut Shava, Israel National Radio.
أنا ابن الرسولي وأؤيد محطة البث الإسرائيلية الوطنية وأؤيد محطة أروت شفا الإسرائيلية.
That's Arut Shava on the internet at www.israelnationalradio.com, spreading the light of Israel around the world.
Hello and welcome to Life Lessons. This is Judy Simon on Israel National Radio. Today I have invited a very special lady. Her name is Eva Lindberg. Eva was born in Sweden. She's lived both in Israel and in the U.S. She is an artist and an author. She's authored the book Tulip Love. She's also an alternative medical healer. And she created the Tulip Center in Marin County, California. And she's known as the Tulip Lady, who has created and taught the methods of healing through Tulip Love. And we're going to hear more about that soon. Eva, how are you doing today?
Wonderful, thank you. The birds are out there singing.
Mm-hmm. What could be better? The beginning of spring.
Exactly, yes. It's time to clear and cleanse our souls before the Passover.
Absolutely, absolutely. Eva, why don't you start by telling us about your grandparents?
Okay, well, I have two sets of grandparents. They're very different from each other. One is sort of the idyllic Swedish grandparents from my father's side, and they lived in Dalarna, which is in the middle of Sweden. I spent many childhood summers picking blueberries and mushrooms and swimming in the beautiful lakes. That's also where I got my love for flowers. They were very special and sweet, just from a background of priests, and also mm-hmm. grandfather was working in a musical company called Hagström. So he used to play a lot of guitar and accordion. That just really added a lot of my love for nature going up there. I used to live in Stockholm,
mm-hmm.
and I used to go to a Jewish school there, Hillelskolan, where mm-hmm. lots of fun, and went to my most favorite summer camp in the world, was called Glemsta, so I had really great summers in Sweden.
So wait, let's backtrack. You told us about your Swedish grandparents. They came uh-huh. from a family of priests, you said, right?
Right.
And what about your mother's parents?
Well, they come actually from a background of rabbis. Mm. Rabbi Akiva Iger is from my mother's side.
Really?
I think she was the seventh generation.
Wow.
Yes. I'm sad I never met them, but I've heard so many stories. My mother's mother, Felicia Stendigova, she was a very beautiful being. She was also a feminist in her time. She wrote a few books about how women are, and she tried to help with the votes for women.
Mm.
She did a lot of research also about different countries in Ethiopia and how women are in Yemen and
really?
So on. Yeah, she was actually an essayist, journalist, and she knew like 8 languages. So my mother grew up in that environment, and her father was an architect, Jakob Stendig, who also really was very interested in keeping the Jewish heritage and Jewish items from synagogues, and he kept the Torahs and sacred scrolls during the Plaszow concentration camp time. And he hid them.
Wow.
And unfortunately, we don't know if we found all of them. And he also was an architect, so he wrote a book called Plaszow, which has been used also in Schindler's List as a reference to how the ghetto was operating.
Wow.
There's some architectural drawings from it, too. And he also came to Israel after the war and was an architect here for a few years, so that's great.
So your grandparents actually survived the war?
Well, my grandfather, but not my grandmother. Unfortunately, she passed away just a few days after the liberation in May
45. What a disappointment.
Yeah, I think what happened was that all her energy was taken to take care of my mother, make her survive. And so when she felt like my mother would survive this and come out of the harm and the horrors, hell, she just collapsed.
I see.
And I'm very sad about that. I never met her. She was a wonderful being. And her brother, Leopold Infeld, wrote a few books also with Albert Einstein.
Oh.
He wanted to teach people the ABC of physics.
Hmm.
And so it took him a lot of courage to go up to Albert Einstein and ask him. He was tongue-tied for like many, many minutes until he could ask, do you want to write the concepts of the relativity and quantum physics together for people to understand it in a simple language?
Right.
And Albert Einstein was quiet for a few minutes and they said, that's a great idea. So he actually, they both got royalties for that book, and it's still actually in Amazon. You can buy it or in stores. It's called The Evolution of Physics. So that's interesting. I have both rabbis and priests in my lineage. So I have to sort of revere that. And I did go back, Lachzor B'Tshuva, a few years ago.
Return to your Jewish heritage. Right?
Exactly. So I think that's because of my background.
So your mother's family came from a line of rabbis, and your father's family came from a line of priests. How did they connect with one another?
How do they connect? This is part of my work. Is I like to do peace work also. I really have to embrace those worlds in me and try to have tolerance and see all faiths and all kind of walks of life and embrace all of them together. That's why I like to do healing work and peace prayers. So I think that's kind of my way of integrating those pasts in my being.
Did your mother marry a non-Jew?
Yeah, which is kind of peculiar because she was very Jewish and she went through the Holocaust. And so I guess they just fell in love and there was no stopping them. And so in the beginning, they were mainly just living poetry and musical life together, not so much a Jewish home. But later when they divorced, I think we started to be more traditional Jews.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know Hashem's ways,
God's
ways, why they got together.
So you were born in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you remember of your own childhood home?
What do I remember? I remember the piano and my sister and me playing in the garden. We had a peach tree. We used to give all the fruits to the neighbors. I also have sad memories of the neighbors being sort of quite anti-Semitic.
Really?
Yeah, the children would throw things at us sometimes over the fence. But in general, I had great friends, too. There weren't. So I have a mixed feeling about it. But what made my childhood memories is going to a Jewish school and the Glemsta summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed going and doing things in nature, and my father was a funny character. He used to live on an island, so sometimes when the ice was full, we could walk over. But if not, we would have to scream on the side on the bridge, "Papa, Papa," so he can come and get us in a boat. And it's funny, in the winters, he was a musician, so he bought a big grand piano. So in the winter, they dragged it over the ice.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a character. He used to make holes in the ice and dip in there.
Oh, wow. That's
cool. I mean, that's a Swedish thing. They like the cold water. So that's that background.
How old were you when your parents divorced?
I was very small. I was 2.5. Mm. Very vague memories of them being together, but then visiting both of their homes.
And you lived with your mother?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she was a special, wonderful woman. And then when we moved to Israel, she started working here in Tel Aviv in the university.
Mm-hmm.
She was crazy about magnesium. She started researching as a doctor in the 60s. And many people now start to understand magnesium is very important intake in the body. So we used to call her Professor Magnesium.
Oh.
Yeah. And she was a really good, fantastic woman. Also, she wrote a lot of poetry, especially from the war. And some of them are poems written without pen or ink. And we've published some of them. And they're very, very poignant, both emotional and both kind of like an observer. So it's kind of a good balance.
So your family moved to Israel when you were a child?
When I was 15, actually.
Oh, you were already a teenager.
Yeah.
And where did you live in Israel?
In Ramat Aviv, Tel Aviv.
And was that a culture shock for you?
Yeah, it was. It was. But in my school, Allianz, I had some Olim Chadashim, new immigrants, mm-hmm. who were also from overseas, so I could speak with them English. So I slowly got involved. And then I went to the army,
mm-hmm.
Nahal. And I think I got my first training as a healer there because I was a mashakid nifgaim.
Which means?
How do you say that? That's a sergeant.
Yeah, sergeant.
That goes to the hospitals and visits the wounded and sick soldiers. So I traveled a lot during those 2 years.
Visiting, actually, the soldiers that were injured and in the hospital.
Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That must have been difficult.
Yeah, it was very difficult, but it was a really beautiful thing to do. And sometimes we'd have to visit the family. So it was like, I think I got my first training there as a healer. It was really amazing. So that was also good, you know, getting out of North Tel Aviv and seeing all of Israel and all kind of walks of life and traditions.
At that point in your life, what did you want to be when you grow up?
Then? Good question. I probably wanted to be an opera singer, but I still want to be one, so I hope maybe one day to get a great teacher.
It's never too late.
Yeah.
What happened after the army, Eva?
So then I studied in Bezalel, architecture, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then I met my ex-husband, and we moved to California.
Mm-hmm.
And then a whole new world opened up to me, and I felt like, it's not right for me to be in architecture world. It's a bit too harsh and patriarchal. And I just like more organic architecture, and it was hard to work with that. So then I went to study drama therapy, a totally different field, and also art. I went to a wonderful school, the Energy Art School, where I started my fifth-dimensional art series.
Mm.
And there's a website I have about that, too. And then I started to go to a school called CIS, studying psychology and theater, and then I realized I wanted to integrate divisions I had, and I went to a school by Matthew Fox, Creation and Spirituality, where they were focusing on reinvention of work. So we were learning how to create new paradigms in the corporate world and finding what it's needed in society. And I felt like a few things are needed. People are working too hard. They're stress-based. They're touch-deprived. And they don't have time for community or time for themselves. So I created the Tulip Healing System.
And the Tulip Healing System combines the psychology that you've learned and the art that you've learned. Does it also combine the architecture?
In a way, the interior design, because I like to decorate the tulip healing spaces. But it's more the drama therapeutic interventions that I use, as well as the artistic experience, because I want people to feel they enter into a beautiful flower when they come to the Tulip Center.
Okay, so why don't we stop and you tell us a little bit about what exactly is tulip healing?
So the tulip healing is a thing that sort of grew inside of me. I used to pick flowers. I used to dream about flowers, and I saw them in my guided meditations. And I realized later that it's a very mysterious and beautiful flower. In ancient Persian mythology, it means perfect love. And it has a space of a kli, of a vehicle or a vessel.
Mm.
So it can really embrace love from above, God's love, which is everywhere. And it's one of the few, maybe the only cup-shaped flowers that stands erect and stands straightforward.
Mm.
So it's actually saying, I'm here, I'm able to receive the love of Hashem, of God. And so I'm using that as a symbol for us to, A, receive more love in our life, B, also to see that we are beautiful flowers, we're all beautiful blossoms, and we walk around in life not liking ourselves very much.
It's true, actually. We're very self-critical.
We are extremely, even the best of the best, we always have these judging thoughts in our minds. So when you go in nature and you see beautiful deer or flower, you go, wow, that's so beautiful. But when you look in the mirror, you don't usually go, wow, I'm so beautiful.
No. And the people that do that, you don't really think highly of them. They're the arrogant ones.
Exactly. Well, that's why I like tulips, because they're egoless. They're just beauty. And they say, I'm beautiful and I'm love.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a great teaching for us. So I developed the theory that I wrote in the book, Tulip Love. And two main things come out of their two archetypes is that tender, beautiful inner blossom, like an inner child quality, this childlike place. And on the other hand, is a very regal quality. If you look at tulips, they're extremely regal and majestic.
That's true. They have a crown.
Exactly. And that's also connected to the Kabbalah and the Keter, which I'm working also with the Tree of Life meditation. So when you combine these two aspects, that innocent place in ourselves with the regal, majestic qualities in our being, then you're actually getting more and more integrated.
Because
you acknowledge your vulnerability, but you also say, well, I need to be responsible for my life and empower myself and be treating myself as a king or a queen. Eat like a king, eat and walk like a queen, you know, just really honor ourselves, but not from an ego place.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say that a benevolent king is a king that sits and he has a big heart and he rules his kingdom from a place of compassion, but he also knows his own strengths. So that's what I'm trying to create when people come to the tulip healing space. It's also, you enter into the tulip, a nice space of sort of like a womb, like you're going inwards to your own self.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few aspects. You get healing and Reiki, like the inner child work. You also look at childhood memories, like you get a written exercise, remembering moments in your life when you were loved and felt cozy and treated well. Hopefully most of us had that, and some of us didn't.
That's true.
So we can always recreate that. So that's that aspect. And then there's the meditation of receiving more love into our life, light. I call it tulip healing meditation. We're bringing the love and light through the tree of life and also a bit tikkun haneshama, working with the sefirot, the spheres, as well as allowing for a blooming process. So sort of envisioning that we have a flower inside of us that can grow and blossom. So that's the middle part of the evening. And the third part of the event is to celebrate that regal place of the tulip, of the majestic part. And so we're learning how to sit and walk like kings and queens and manifest. If there's a purpose we want to create in a life or a dream, we actually verbalize it. Like, for example, if I had a kingdom, what would I do in this kingdom? How do I create my life in an empowered place?
Hmm.
Or a queen, like, oh, well, I should maybe buy better clothes. I should take care of my body. I should take care of my home better, or my relationship to myself or others, and create more a delicate nature, but also a place of manifesting our strength. So that's kind of culminating the whole process. And it's very joyous, actually. It's really fun to, people love it. Oh, wow. And some people are shying away, like, oh, well, I don't think I deserve to be a queen or a king.
Really?
Yeah, people are shy. Yeah, it's really hard to step into your power.
Eva, what kind of people come to the Tulip Healing Center or would be helped by reading your Tulip Love book?
So any walks of life, religious or non-religious, New Age or conservative people, or corporate people, we all have similar qualities. So sometimes we have had difficult childhoods, and so it's time to sort of forgive and look into that past. Or it's a place to, well, to upgrade ourselves and feel better about ourselves. Plus, it's a very healing environment, so it's relaxing. It's a place of coming home to yourself. So everybody's welcome. Mm-hmm. And I've had religious peoples, even rabbis, to come. And I've also had, the California crowd. It's very New Agey. So I think it works for all people. And also, when we used to do it at festivals, we'd have people from overseas. I think it's a universal thing.
Mm-hmm. And does Tulip Love help problems that are of the normal variety, like we talked about, people that don't think so highly of themselves, and also people with maybe some more serious problems, maybe substance abuse or anger issues or things like that?
It's a good point. If they come for more than a few times, they can find a place to ground themselves into themselves and find hanitzotzot ha'chaim shel atzmam, the inner flame, the inner love for them, all their own self. And so if they connect to that, it can be a substitute for going to addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Addiction is a serious thing is of, like, we run away from ourselves and we automatically are driven by a routine. So one can work on that instead of, you know, catching your thoughts. Why am I going to the bottle? Why am I going to the chocolate? And catching yourself before that and just saying, well, maybe I should listen to what I feel inside and meditate and remember that I'm a beautiful flower.
It's a safe place in a scary world.
Yes, thank you for reminding me. One of the main things is sacred boundaries. And actually, it's a little bit hard for me in this world to share that with people because people don't understand. And so even in personal negotiations, I take time to create a space to do the work. And people just want to get on with it.
Mm.
But the more you take time to create the parameters of any negotiation or relationships, the more you create sacred space. And the more you create sacred space, the more you can feel trust and you can be more creative. So also at the Tulip Healing events, especially in California, where we at the Tulip Center in Marin County, we had a special entrance where the gatekeeper stands. The gatekeeper is the one that welcomes people and is also keeping the space of the healing inside so that the people that are healed inside are feeling safe.
Eva, we're going to take a break for some commercials. We want to talk more to Eva about the Tulip Healing, so stay tuned for more love and peace and warmth and safe space and beauty and cleanliness close to Passover, to Pesach. We'll be right back.
Israeli-born artist Baruch Nachshon moved to the holy city of Hebron in 1967. Ever since then, his colorful paintings have wowed art critics the world over.
The world is very gray, and I have to bring some life and color to the world.
Now, the painting of your dreams can be in your living room. Click on NachshonArtStore.com for lithographs, posters, books, and more. www.NachshonArtStore.com. Original Jewish art from the holy city of Hebron.
You just pray for them.
Israel National Radio.
Break the
Israel National Radio.
You're listening to Israel National Radio.
Israel National Radio.
Israel National Radio.
Israel National Radio. We're praying for redemption.
We're back with the second half of Life Lessons. This is Judy Simon on Israel National Radio. We're talking to the Tulip Lady, Eva Lindberg. Eva, in the first half of the show, while you were telling me your own life story, you had mentioned that you were Chazara B'Tshuva, that you came back to your Jewish heritage and your Jewish roots. At what point in your life did that happen?
I think God has interesting ways to invite you back to the source. I came back to Israel because my mother was very sick, Zichrona Vecha, blessed her memory. She was a Holocaust survivor. She had also compromised health. So I came to take care of her a few years ago, and then while I was in Tel Aviv, I went to study Kabbalah with Rav Cohen Yuval Asharov, who is from the Organoz Institute. He teaches Chinese medicine, holistic healing, and Kabbalah.
Wow, what a combination.
Yeah, he's an amazing teacher. And so I just sat there every other 2 weeks and listened to him, and he didn't say, you should keep Shabbat, da, da, da. He wasn't like that. He was just talking about how he himself returned to Judaism, and I was just fascinated. And I kept asking people, why you do this mitzvah, or this good deed, why you do this? And everybody gave me such great answers. I mean, just so slowly, I just started keeping the mitzvot and Shabbat.
Wow.
It was really amazing. So then after my dear mom passed away, I didn't need to stay in Israel. I could go back to my cozy California healthy life. And, you know, you have so much nature and beauty there. But then my neshama, my soul, had been awakened. And so now I prefer to live in Jerusalem, where is the bosom of Hashem, of God.
Now, you developed your Tulip Love program before you developed your relationship with God. But I noticed that there's something very godly about it. You talk a lot about Kabbalistic concepts.
Exactly.
Where did that flow?
So what happened is that I didn't know that, but while I was writing my book at the Tulip Center in Marin, I kept writing a lot of things that I later realized were Kabbalistic, and then so I became more and more interested in it. So I think either my soul studied with some Kabbalistic teachers in the past lifetimes, or
maybe it was from your rabbinic grandparents, great-grandparents.
Right. So then when I started Lachzor B'Tshuva, I started to look at my material. I said, interesting. And when I started living in Jerusalem, I've made some transition into more Judaism. And especially with the tulip healing meditation, it's very Kabbalistic now.
Hmm.
And I also realized that the tulip itself is the crown of the Tree of Life. It is the Keter. And I've done drawings around that, too.
So in teaching tulip healing, you're also teaching a little bit about Judaism, just like your rabbi from Organuz did for you.
God willing, maybe. Yeah, let's see, the Malchut, which is the kingdom at the lowest sphere of the Tree of Life, is exactly about kingdom and kings and queens. And the Tree of Life represents different body organs, and the Malchut represents the mouth. And so a funny anecdote is that when you look at tulips, it's also two lips.
Ah.
So there's a lot of fun parallels there.
And you make your home in Israel now? You no longer live in California where you created the Tulip Center?
What I do is I go back in the summers to Europe, Scotland, or Sweden. I do tulip healing work there or in California. But I've made Jerusalem now my headquarters, shall we say, my main abode. And it's because I keep Shabbat, and it's the best place to keep Shabbat. It's amazing. Amazing, holy Shekinah, holy, sacred energy.
Eva, do you find that there's flowers missing in your life? Jerusalem is not exactly Sweden
exactly.
Or California.
Yeah, You got it. That's why it's a bit difficult. I need to leave like twice a year because I miss water and nature. Mm-hmm. It's very dry in Jerusalem.
So you have the spirituality, but you don't have the physical beauty that
exactly.
you had.
Exactly, exactly. So what do you do when your neshama, your soul, needs to be in a holy place, but your body enjoys more another climate? What do you do?
Well, one thing you do is you create beauty where you are.
Yes, that's true. And then you go on for vacation.
Right. Eva, you had asked me to play a song, which mm-hmm. I had never heard of before. I listened mm-hmm. to it at home. It was a beautiful song. It's called Joy of Life by yes. Karen Nash.
Yes.
And it's a sort of an Indian feel to it. Why did you choose this particular song, Eva?
Because we use it in the healing meditations, and or when we're kings and queen, we have a sort of a nice red carpet we can walk on. And so that music is really great. It sort of makes you feel like a happy king or a happy queen. It's very joyous, but it's also calming at the same time. It sort of has a nice balance of upbeat yet relaxing.
Now, I'm about to play the song, and I wanted to ask you, what mm-hmm. do you recommend the listeners and, of course, myself think about or imagine while the song is playing? I want you to sort of give us some homework, give us a task to do.
Okay, so imagine that you place yourself in the favorite place that you like to be in nature or somewhere in the world, or that you've had a great experience of feeling good in your physical body and in your mental space and as a soul. And imagine that you're surrounded with love and beauty and flowers, if you wish, but you're also sitting or walking as you're a dignified being or king and queen, and you're enjoying yourself and you're enjoying your environment and you're thankful. You're thankful to existence or God, if you believe in God, that He's given your life, because God actually loves us all and we're all regal, we're all kings and queens. We don't have to be born into a royal blood. We're all beautiful kings and queens.
Okay, so let's keep that in mind and listen to the song Joy of Life.
Great.
Rabbah, that was beautiful. Thank you for that wonderful, wonderful task. I just felt it. I just felt it. I know that you still give workshops that are connected to tulip healing. What goes on at a workshop? Just walk me through it. Tell me what a workshop would be like.
Okay, so you're invited to the Tulip Center and you receive a welcoming and a little clearing, cleansing you, a little bell cleaning you. And then you take off your shoes, you go into a nice, loving sort of heart space with beautiful colors and soft fabric and peaceful music. And then there are mattresses where you can lie down and relax and receive Reiki. I give Reiki healing. And if there are other healers, we also have healers work on you. And if also a family member comes or a couple, then they work on each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we have time for everybody to receive healing. But before we do that, we have a sort of check-in and we light candles and pray for the world. And then we have an exercise of a memory of our childhood. We're writing it down and share it, so that we can bring that into the healing. And then we have a refreshment break, goodies. And then we go back and we sit in a circle with thrones, nice chairs, and we meditate with the Tree of Life and tulip healing work. And then after that, we enter into the regal part, where we are invited to create and manifest a part of ourselves that we want in our life, which we start the workshop with. Let's say we're missing something that we didn't have in our childhood or we want to create. Then we bring that to the grown-up self, the regal self. And for example, one can bring that childlike quality or a little bit holding a heart or a stuffed animal that represents our childhood and take that with us and become kings and queens. It's making a bridge between these two places.
It does sound like there's a dichotomy. I'm trying to picture a king or a queen exactly. holding a teddy bear.
Exactly. It's very funny. But that's the whole point. That
is
the bridge.
Making that bridge, drawing the connection between the child and the regal part of my own inner self.
Yeah, I think that's why it works, because we're all walking around life as we're grown up and we're strong and we have these harsh faces. But inside every body of us, we have a little inner child that's kind of wounded.
And scared.
And we overcompensated by doing a lot of stuff that we actually really stressing ourselves inside with. So when we listen to that inner part of ourselves and breathe into it, sort of just allowing it, and then saying, okay, you know what? I need to also take care of myself, and I have a family, I have a job, but I want to be bigger than I am now. But I also want to remember that I am a child inside, and I'm very vulnerable, which we all are.
Yeah.
But the sad part is that we don't have a place to talk about in society. So the third part is that celebration of uniting these parts.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to walk with a teddy bear. But then we have we also have fun theatrical regalia. We have robes and crowns.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it's like very fun, the last part. I mean, it can be fun in the beginning too, but these are stages that you would go through. And if somebody's called to do it, then they come. And if some people don't like sort of theatrical things or meditation, they don't come.
Okay.
Those who feel aligned with that kind of work.
It sounds like there's just a positive energy. That's what I feel it. I sense this positive energy.
Definitely, yes. And I got a wonderful space in Jerusalem, and amazing that the owner, he lived here 60 years, and he's a Holocaust survivor as well, like my mother. And I had the privilege to rent the place after him, the first one after he left. And he came in 48 and built a house here. So that's a very powerful place.
Eva, how does somebody contact you or find out more about your healing events? You have a website?
Yeah, I have a website. It's called tuliplove.com.
That's one word?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so anyone that wants to look into Eva Lindbergh's website, www.tuliplove.com.
Right, and the phone number is 054-486-0597.
That's in Israel?
Yeah.
You have a phone number in California as well?
Yeah, 510-527-4389.
Okay, I'm going to repeat those numbers for our listeners. If you're calling from Israel, then you can reach Eva at 054-486-0597. And if you're calling from outside of Israel, from the United States, and you want to reach her in California, the number in California is area code 510-527-4389.
Great, yes.
And when is your next healing event?
The next one is going to be in May only because of all the holidays and the Independence Days and Holocaust Day. It's on the 3rd and the 24th of May.
Okay.
And
Where is that?
It's in Talbiya. It's near the Jerusalem Theater.
In Jerusalem. Okay, so there's a healing event on May 3rd and another one on May 24th in Jerusalem.
Right.
And if someone wants to register for that, they contact you on the website or at the phone numbers you gave us?
Exactly, yes.
Wonderful. Okay, Eva, we're reaching the end of our show, and I'd like to ask you, on your life's journey through three continents and through a lot of self-healing and healing others, what lessons have you learned that you'd like to share with us?
Okay, my lessons, that we need to constantly pray for ourselves and others, and also when we're in public places. And even if we don't feel so good, try to smile or be encouraging to others, because we need to raise the vibration all the time. And life is very difficult. And to give a good word, or lefargen, as they say in Hebrew, is very important, because we're all beautiful beings, but we're so bombarded with harshness, and we forget to come from love and joy. So that's very important to do. I also know that harsh lessons in life have a detour effect, and there's always a reason for it, and that then later on, like a spiraling effect of our life, we come back to a place where we started off and we understand later why it happened. So it's very important to stay thankful for even the difficult experiences. Especially the good ones. It's very good to appreciate what we have. And so when I became more a practicing Jew, I bless the apple I eat. I bless people. And I think it's a great way to live, because it's not really muvan meilav. It's not really obvious that we have food every day, or that we can breathe and we can walk in a way healthy. So we need to give thanks every day. So I learned a lot of that. And I also am very thankful for being in Israel, even though it's a very difficult place in the world. It's also like the holographic imprint of many things, so many faiths here, and it's a powerful place, especially Jerusalem. So I think it's an amazing also situation where there's so many people praying, especially on Saturday. We have the priest, the Kohanim, blessing us every day, and we have the Shabbat candles lighting every Friday night. Can you imagine? What other country on Friday night you have so much light lit at the same time? It's a very powerful healing vibration, and I hope, you know, not just for the region, but it sends love to the world.
Right. And Jerusalem is the center of the world. So
exactly, it really is, and it's really amazing. I'm living like 1 or 2 kilometers from the holiest of the holiest, where God designated the temple.
Wow! So what a privilege!
Amazing, yeah, it is, and. And I'm saddened about the fact that people don't get to understand the beauty that exists in this country, and they hear so much negative things.
It's true.
And that's why I'm here, trying to create some loving vibration. And I invite people here to see the other side, because it's not known.
Eva, I'm so glad that you joined us on the show, and I'm so glad that you brought your positive attitude and the beauty that you bring with your being, really, and you sort of overflow with it and share it with anyone that you touch. I wish you the best of success in your own personal life and in your healing, and I wish you a wonderful Passover.
Yes, God willing, may we all be clean and clear coming here.
Thank you, Eva.
Thank you, Judy. God bless you for all the good work.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a wonderful week. This is Judy Simon, Life Lessons, Israel National Radio.
This is Laser Brody from the Holy Land of Israel. Join me every Thursday at 7 p.m. Israel time or 12 noon Eastern Standard Time for an hour of joy and inspiration on our new program, Laser Beams, here at Israel National Radio. Looking forward to seeing you.
What lessons have you learned from life? Here's a life lesson from George Bernard Shaw. Some men see things as they are and ask why. Others dream things that never were and ask, why not? These are life lessons learned by famous people. Would you like to hear some more life lessons? Learn from people like you and me who have been through a journey. Tune in to the show Life Lessons with Judy Simon on Israel National Radio.